Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. I am here with two members of my firefighting family. I have Scott.
Hey.
And I've got Ash.
Oh, hey there.
So tonight we're going to talk about, we're going to recap a couple of calls that we've had.
How are you now?
I know. Not so bad.
We're going to recap a couple of calls that have gone on, and then we're going to talk about some training that's happened over the past couple of weeks and some scenarios. So who wants to talk about the first couple grass fires?
Yeah, we had some grass fires. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some grass burned.
Grass burned.
Yeah, it's been, actually, it hasn't even been warm.
No.
It's just been like
weird.
Mid-teens during the day. It's not crazy hot.
We've had like six grass fires this, this last couple weeks. All small, of course, all slow moving, but again, it's one of those early seasons.
Yep.
But we had a early season last year too, and turned out to be not too much going on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, actually today we had an interesting. It was at the gun range, which is kind of odd. We're in the pistol range instead of climbing up the. They had a little burn barrel going, and it kind of jumped out of the burn barrel and went up one of the berms where the pistols are shot and burned along the edge, and we went and hit it pretty fast and knocked it down, but. In the summer, we were talking like that thing. What I mean, because it's
that could have been rocking.
Well, because the rifle range is inside a bowl. It's literally like called the sportsman's bowl, and so obviously it's at the bottom of the bowl. And if it went up in the side of the mountain, if that was summer, it would have been ripping up that mountain. Mm-hmm. And there's a few houses up there. One house right in the draw.
So yep.
We were actually discussing Dennis and I, if it was summer, how much different would it have been, and how we wouldn't be where we were. We'd be up at that house defending it right now.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be spraying from the bottom.
And that house is tucked in with a bunch of trees as well.
Right? Yeah.
Sure is.
A lot more pine trees up there.
And and that draw literally dumps right to the house.
Funnels it right up there.
Yeah. So that would have been a point to protect. Yeah. And something to be said about like where that is, because of its location and the geography, it's a bit of a comms dead zone for us.
Yeah.
So... You know, remembering that going back out there, so Chief was going out there direct. Scott, you were on first due, and we had to play a little bit of radio tag from Chief on scene to you guys responding to the trucks that were coming behind you.
Yeah.
So again, just something to be mindful about.
Yeah, because it bounced to our truck, and I heard what he wanted next, and then you guys at the hall couldn't hear what we wanted next, and then I heard you say. All I heard you say was send the tender next. I said, I actually wants a bush truck next.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure. Because it was all broken up where we were.
Because it was broken for you guys as well. Yeah. So. But I wasn't even here yet. So I was still responding. And I didn't know who was here. So I'm like, hey, if I can just relay that info. And then, lucky for me, when I got to the hall, the truck was still here. But yeah, so that was another little... hurdle that you have to kind of know your coverage area, right? Like we all know that's a bit of a dead zone. So getting the chief in there first to see what we have, we know what that area looks like, and what can be some of the concerns basically, right?
Yeah. And a bit of pre-plan too, right? Then for the next area, we know we're going into that zone.
Yeah.
Make sure everybody mention, hey, switch over to attack channel as you approach. Because we've got a couple areas in our town as well. Same thing. As soon as you get to the bench area by my house, Collins go for a shit.
Yeah.
And you need to switch to attack just because you can't. Mm-hmm. It's so broken.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we learned that. I mean, that place has been subject to flooding in the past. Mm-hmm. We've been medical calls there in the past in that general area. So, yeah, it's had its fair share of calls that little area there. So.
And just above it, we had the...
We're chatting about the
hydraulic house.
Yeah,
I'm still. I can't picture that house at all when I was younger, but it was not. So it would turn.
Yep. Yeah, it was designed to it had a whole bunch of hydraulic fluid and pumps and stuff in the basement, and it was architecturally designed so he could rotate the whole house. Yeah. Yeah, it's quite the spectacle when it caught on fire.
Yeah, I was gonna say how that worked out for him. How long was it around for before it caught on fire?
I don't know. I can't remember. I think a long time.
Probably fired the architects there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would just basically an oil-filled house.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anyways, moving on.
So yeah, I mean that was like one of like six that grass fire.
Yeah, and we had the kind of the average, the normal farmers burning things that we weren't supposed to do, and burn piles getting away on him. One fella decided he's going to possibly burn his field, even though he told us it was something else. And
yeah.
Either way, it was kind of, you know, not what correct what happened. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that got put out. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's that season. Spring always happens and everybody's burning. And
yep.
It's that kind of weird zone where it's like not hot but not cool enough. And it's just a little bit windy. And it,
yeah, you know, we really haven't gotten those spring showers to like dampen up the foliage. So things are drying out coming off of like our winter melt. Everything's pretty dry and we are getting sun. It's not crazy hot out, like we're you know, still lows, like we might dip into freezing, but during the afternoons we can see 10 to 15 degrees and with no precipitation. It doesn't take long for those ground fuels to dry out. So yeah, it's, you know, spring is always that kind of weird shoulder season that, you know, people get pretty complacent because, hey, we just had X feet of snow all winter. It's got to be good. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it gets dry pretty fast.
And everybody wants to burn. Everybody wants to clean up the areas, right, and have fire pits going. And we're still getting these strong winds.
Yeah, and they are permitted to burn. Like, there are good burning days, but, you know, you have to have all of your, you know, precautions in place.
Oh, absolutely. Well, remember that one day I messaged you guys when I had a burn pile up on our property. Yeah. And thankfully I had the tractor that I had Olivia out there with a shovel chucking on the grass fire. And yeah, anyways.
Yeah, like I think I said this before, these little fires in the spring are always like the scrimmages of, like, if you're like,
yeah,
like a hockey game. Like, it's like the opener. Like, not even the opener. It's like, what is it when they play like the nothing games?
Like inner squad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just whatever.
Yeah, it's basically like they're like the warm up practice games, and we're
yeah, they count, out. But
yeah, it's still fire, but we're shaking out our, you know, getting used to pulling the right hoses and putting the right gear on and,
and preseason games,
preseason, that's it, so
yeah, and then moving from the grass fires into good old structure fires.
Yeah, ours is barely a structure fire.
Yeah,
it sounded really crazy.
It came in like it got the old blood pumping.
Yeah, so it was a two-story, like, type 5, but big. Like, it was like a...
large healthcare.
Yeah, it's like a...
Yeah,
it's like a healthcare kind of thing. Unsprinklered. So, yep. Still fairly new construction, but unsprinklered. And the way it came in, it was on the second floor, second story of the... It didn't sound like it was on the deck. It sounded like it was the second story of the building was on fire, and the fire was falling into the first floor. So when we're leaving the truck, we're like, this thing's like full rock. Like, it's like, first story is fully involved, and the second floor is starting to go. We're like, why is it going down? Like, we're thinking it says we're driving, because I was actually in the back seat for that call. And I mean, the officer were discussing in the front seat, like, what? Like, I don't understand. And then turn out we get there, and it's actually just a large deck is burning, and we're not sure if it was a cigarette or something. We're not sure what started it. But this pretty big deck's burning. And it'd be,
and it was heavy timber.
Yeah, like a heavy timber deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, the building wasn't heavy timber, but the deck was heavy timber. Yeah,
second story deck.
Yeah, so it was going pretty good. Like, it had been burning for a while because it burned through the decking material, burned through one of the timber supports. So that was part of our, like, can we go up there? Is it safe? So we hit it from the bottom. And then I threw a ladder. I climbed up, grabbed the hose, knocked it down, tested the deck, and it was actually solid still. It was like just the one area was not. Did some exterior, like, we pulled some of the, like, stucco. It's not like true stucco, it's like that fakey
stucco.
Well, like, I don't call like stucco on my house from the 60s is that stucco. It's like actually like concrete that's like an inch thick, but like the new stucco was like this,
it's like quarter inch,
a tiny bit of concrete, and there's a bunch of like styrofoam behind it. That's not really stucco. So anyways, we tore a bunch of that out, and it actually, probably within a couple minutes, if we wouldn't get there, because what had happened is it started, the exterior window started cracking and breaking and falling in, so it was starting to break through the window, and I think it would have pushed in, and there was a bunch of fuel in that room, large open room, no no door to isolate it.
Right.
So it would have been going really good if someone didn't call it in. But yeah, we knocked it down, cool it off. Yeah,
good.
Yeah, no, it was good. Yeah, you guys rocked the outside. We were on second truck. We sent a team to go on the inside.
That was their plan.
Hey,
That's kind of funny because I'm on the outside of the deck and I'm like, okay, I'm going to get inside, but I don't want to shatter it because like nothing's really broken. So I didn't want to break that door. So I start pulling like my motor stuff out and getting like a door wedge. I'm like, okay, I think I can wedge this door enough and then I'll get the Halligan and I'll just give it a little pop and it should pop without breaking anything. I'm doing all this and I look and I can see, I thought it was my reflection through the window because I could see a firefighter in the other in the window. So I'm like, that's odd. And I'm looking at him like, that's not me. And I realized like the search team had gotten inside and was standing like on the other side of the door. And Kevin's looking at me, he's like, what? I'm like, what? So I'm like, open the door. He's like, no. I'm like, open the door. it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah, sent to the team. It was actually like not pretty smoky, but there was some decent smoke inside the structure. We had the one door open for event. Those guys pushed in. They had a thermal camera. They took a piss cannon with them. Because we knew at that point that everything was extinguished out on the deck. Yeah. But if there was any extension, you know, at least have something with them. So those guys went in, did a thorough search. That was all safe. I mean, that had the potential to be really big. Time was on our side, which is good. I think somebody was either at one of the adjacent buildings, because it's in a bit of a complex where there's like a health center, an office building, and a school. So there's people on site in one of the other buildings, so they saw it really early, and our response was pretty good that night as well. So time was definitely on our side. And that was like call one of four that night. We actually had a pretty sweet car fire that same night.
Next morning, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was just a textbook car fire parked on the side of the road. For whatever reason, this car had been parked for a year. Like, it hadn't been driven. There was no insurance parked outside of their house. It lit on fire somehow. There was some pretty heavy shrubs right next to the car. So worried about
there's another car there.
There's a vehicle directly behind it, and yeah, I mean, you guys were first on scene there.
I was the first on scene.
Oh no,
I was second.
Oh no, yeah, you're with me, right? But yeah, they were pretty quick on exposure protection. Melted a little bit of the fascia on the truck behind them, but yeah, I mean, that was drivable. I'm sure there's going to be a claim, but two-line approach, making sure you're covering off your firefighter.
No, it's textbook. My hybrid hit was textbook.
Boom.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, we hit a hydrant. Yeah, not a hit hydrant, but a captured hydrant. Yep. The only thing we did, we overshot it because we weren't sure if they wanted one. And then I asked the officer, I'm like, do you want a hydrant? He's like, yeah. Like, usually we don't, but it's like, you know what? Why not?
Yeah, we have all the...
It's a car fire. There's a hydrant right here.
Yeah, let's just do it.
Like, I don't like running the engine down to, like, almost nothing.
Let's not be reactive.
Oh, there's another call. Oh,
especially when there's one right there.
So grabbed that. The funny thing is because I just trained it with the rookies the other night, so I'm like, whoop. I had a helper with me, so we knocked it out fast. Some lady yelled at me because I flushed the hydrant and it like hit her lawn furniture. She's like, yeah, I hate my furniture. I'm like, what furniture? I'm like looking like, that's your lawn furniture. It's designed to get wet. And I'm not even hitting it on. Like, just a bunch of water's lining on. I'm like, I'm not like destroying it.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure if you know this, but somebody's vehicle.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you know, but yeah, there's all these like engines here that need water.
Yeah.
It's like, jeez.
I love people.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done.
You had a structure bar.
We did, yeah. So, I'm looking at my wounds post-vacation, post-trip. And, Pedro goes off for a structure fire, and I hear the address. It's like, that's right by my house, just up the street. Like, shit, well, I am not missing this. So, go racing down to the hall, jump in the truck. It's on our side of the hall, or our side of the lake. So, theory, we should get there quick. We start loading the truck. Sitting there waiting. Still no driver. It's like, come on. Last guy pulls up, jumps in. Just as we get rolling out of the bay, we hear the other truck already en route. And they say, we're going to need a tender. I was like, shit, all right. One of our guys has to stop now, jump out, grab our tender. So now at this point, the other truck just passed us at the stop sign when they're pulling out in front of us. So they got there first. Really tight access to this place. It turned out to be a car fire that was up against a detached shop garage, with a big wood sliding garage door. So with some extension up to the door into the soffits and whatnot, but really good knockdown. The first crew, the chief actually, he was on the hose and he had the line out. So they got that knocked down right quick. And then actually I have to give props to my neighbor. So he scoots up there in his golf cart, sees me go racing by, and he started spraying water with the garden hose on it, and the thing was not almost out, but it had a really good knockdown. So I pulled up. I'm like, what the hell, man?
Like, they got a fun away.
Thanks.
What does the neighbor do for a job?
He's a firefighter, yeah.
Yeah, career firefighter from the coast.
Career firefighter from the coast, exactly. So he's razzing me. He's like, well, I got here quicker in my golf cart than you guys. Like, yeah, yeah. Anyway, everybody did awesome though. Good truck placements, good hose line management for everybody. My partner on the other 1¾, we stretched out right away. She ripped it out and I was grabbing some tools. Turn around, she's already got the V split from the Minuteman all dialed and ready to go. And yeah, it was awesome. Awesome to see. We've been practicing that with different types of hose deployment anyway. So really good to see. Everybody did very well. And a quick little wash down of our gear and back to the hall.
Perfect.
So, other than that, that was our excitement. That and alarm calls.
Because we're there.
Yeah.
Let's move into some of the training you guys have done the past couple weeks. So, same with us. We took on some new recruits. Mm-hmm. I know for some of us, we're getting our recruits running through some things at our hall. We've been doing some driver training. And with you guys, some of your rookie training, you guys have been going through some PPE, SCBA, and
water. Did you go training with your recruits right away?
No, not right away. Oh. Just in general with other stuff. They've been kind of observing that.
They've been on for a while.
Yours aren't like fresh?
No, ours pretty much started at the same time as yours.
Oh, they're driver training already?
No.
Oh, sorry.
So no. Recruit training slash
driver training.
Oh,
slash
driver training.
Yeah.
Right.
Slash. So there's a slash in there. Yeah. So we've, of course, got them all their PPE and been going through that stuff and going through the trucks with them, getting everything set up for the our 10-1 training program with them. And, so then they once they kind of finish some of their other whatever they needed to do with the chiefs in the hall, they popped out and kind of observed some of the other training skills that the other crews were doing. Mm-hmm. But... yeah, so why don't you guys talk about some of your recruit training for your...
Yeah, so stuff. Ours is probably... I'm guessing it's going to be different than 1001 training. Like, we're still following the JPRs of the 1001, but mm-hmm. we're... like I said, we always layer ours, so it's like... I try to layer it day after day. They just do a little bit more. So first day is always... we go over PPE, SCBA, and then the second day, second week. So now they know how to put on their PPE, put on their SCBA. So now we... put them on the truck, and one of us drives the truck around, like, the block. Gives them a little longer. They drive around the block, and we get to a hydrant. And then I'm waiting the hydrant. They get off the truck. I look, make sure they got all their gear on right. Good. Okay. Everybody take your gear off. So they take all the stuff off, put all their SCBAs back. Then they get out, and we show them how to work with the hydrants. Normally, we show them how to work with the tenders, but you guys were using tenders on your scenario. So we went over the hydrant work. So we did a little bit more on hydrants than we normally would. Worked on that for a while. Got them all to hit it a few times. And then the next week, now they know how to do the hydrants. Then we went to a different hydrant. And same thing, we're driving down. They got to put their PPE, SCBA on as they're getting down there. Be all ready to go. They get off the truck. We do a buddy check. Yeah, you good? Okay, take everything off again. This time, as we get up to the hydrant, I grab one of the guys. I said, okay, you, before you put all your PPE on, jump out, grab the hydrant kit, and show me how to hit the hydrant. So he did it. He did really well. We had one little issue because we couldn't get one of the caps off. Something happened, so the cap was like stuck on the hydrant. Like, I was like, ah, I'll try. I'm like jumping on the wrench. I'm like, okay, it's actually stuck on there. So we just had to put the town note. So I told the guy, just shift gears and open one. Because normally we do two caps and we do two gate valves.
Yeah.
So he did well. Hit it pretty fast, and then the other guys were sitting in the truck. Then we reloaded all the equipment again and started doing hose lines. So ran through how to run 1½, standing, kneeling, and I always show prone, just kind of as a thing. I mean, I think it's an important thing to learn. Mm-hmm. So we do standing, kneeling, prone with that. Then we went over to the 2½, and like always, get them to run the 2½ by themselves, just as more of a confidence booster. Mm-hmm. Did that a few runs and then showed them the snagger tool and how like held back, and they really help you, especially on a 2.5. So yep. They really love that thing. And then some defensive stuff with a 2.5 loop. Yeah, just basically just ran through a bunch of different hoses. Then reloaded all the stuff, and that was it. So they're into their like third week now. And then next time we come out, we're actually going to take them into the burn building. So now that they kind of got the PPE dialed in and they don't want to use a hose line, we're going to take them in the burn building for a cold start. So they're not going to be spraying anymore. I'll be running the hose, but showing them heat and showing them how their PPE holds up, and we're going to show them fire dynamics and stuff. And then after then session 5, 6, 7, then we just keep going from there. Mm-hmm. Venting after that, and just kind of the bread and butter stuff for their first 8 weeks. There's a little bit of a issue there because we have a seminar coming, so that'll put a little wrench in the training.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It always does in the springtime when during a seminar. But yeah, they're doing really well.
Yeah, I find that that's a really good way to start too. You know, like get the basics of the PPE, get them comfortable in it, knowing why, and then the SCBAs and being very familiar with the SCBAs, because you know part of being a new recruit, if we get a big event, you know that's where they're going to be useful, like helping with the SCBAs, you know, getting that water supply and knowing how to take a hydrant and do that basic hose handling, because if we need them on a truck, you know, earlier than we may want to put them on, they can still be super helpful for exterior water applications, right?
Yeah.
So it's very key in building that confidence and those skills.
Yeah,
like we're not trying to rush them on to any of our calls, but if they show up now, they know what their gear is supposed to look like and beyond. They know how to help capture a hydrant. And if they do get stuck on an inch and a half or a 2.5 with a partner on the outside of the structure, like they could be useful. Obviously, we're going to lean on all of our trained firefighters first, but I mean, there's times when people are busy, and I mean, maybe we look back and we have one of our recruits, I mean, basically from this point forward, to be outside of the structure, they could pose some definite help.
Well, and they'll understand the purpose of why we're doing it, and you know, the safe aspects of how to handle that from a safe distance, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, awesome.
You know, and like guys around here always joke that, like, you know, myself, Scott, we're like hard during training. We always go long. It's always challenging. So the first night we're out there doing our thing separately, and we come back, and I'm watching, and I'm like, man, like Trafford, like what are you doing to these guys? So like one of our new recruits, I'm looking. And I'm like, I think they're fucking bleeding. I'm like, what have you been doing to these guys?
Huh? This guy was bleeding? Who's bleeding?
Guy.
He's bleeding?
Wasn't actually bleeding. So what it was, so they had been out doing, you know, whatever with...
Oh, right. I remember that.
And I'm watching, and like, under their boot is like this massive pile of red. And I'm like, hey, stop, guys. I'm like, hey.
Because I was like,
I think they're bleeding. And so then all of a sudden Carrie's like, oh shoot, okay, stop, okay, lift up the boot, lift up the pant leg. So what it actually was these are older boots that like we put into storage after like somebody got new boots. So the last time these boots were in service, there might have been a little bit of fire retardant still on the bottom of the boot.
And then they stepped in a little bit of water. Just a little puddle of water that was on the ground
from one of the pumps.
Instead of washing off, and then it looked like watered down blood on the ground. Like it was like,
Jesus,
like
man.
They were stiff.
Wash your fucking gear.
I didn't wash. It's just on the bottom of the boot. Evidently wasn't washed.
I guess the bottom of the boot. Like all of their PPE topside was all clean and dialed, but I guess like this one pair
it's
of
a
boots.
Boot. Who washes the bottom of their boot?
I know. It's funny. Oh god, that's funny.
So that was their intro to. OFD training. You could bleed out night one.
Yeah. Where's your tourniquet?
Well, down there going, that's not good.
Oh, man.
No.
We all noticed it, though.
Yeah, it was great.
Eventually.
Oh, I love it. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Okay, switching gears. Then that moved into scenario past 2 weeks.
Yeah, so we ran kind of back-to-back scenarios 2 weeks in a row, and what we tried to do is build off of the previous couple weeks of training, which we were doing some hose movement using the bump up partner, building search, and firefighter down. So what we tried to do the first week, and we actually had a pretty green group of people, just the way that the night turned out. We had one of our experienced officers was away at a work dinner. Obviously, Scott was busy with the new recruits. I had Grant and Mike that were assisting me, so we were out of a scenario, and just a few extra people were busy. So we had just the group that we had was a pretty green, not pretty green group, but we had less experience than we would generally have on any random call or most Thursday practices. So we were going to run, it was a two-story single family dwelling type 5 simulated structure. The call comes in that it's a direct alarm, so that was going to prompt our duty officer. This night was our chief was going to be coming direct as IC. As they approach, myself as dispatch upgrade that, hey, we're getting a second call on this. A neighbor sees heavy smoke and some fire showing, and they witnessed the homeowner arrive at home and run inside. So just kind of prompted, there's a reason that this vehicle has now pulled up to the structure and went inside, right? So just to get that mind rolling that, A, we're going to have a potential rescue for one, and why is that person going in? So we knew that they were going in to get their kid out of there. So they had left their teenage child at home or whatever, of age to be home alone.
Or not, they're terrible parents.
Or it's just a shitty parent, and there's a six-year-old running around rampant, right? So that was the overall call. And then at some point in time, because we were practicing firefighter down, we were going to throw in a firefighter down call, kind of on the back end of the scenario. So call comes in, we upgrade the call. We've just been working on our passport systems and our overall IC and accountability. So we really wanted to see that roll out. So Chief Bob gets on scene, gives a quick update of what he sees. We weren't allowing secondary units to respond until on the first scenario until Bob asked for it. And then on the second scenario, I'll get to that in a minute. We kind of changed that up a little bit. So Bob gets on scene. He gives his quick size up. Teams start to arrive. And a plan is made, and they start to go in there and action out the plan. Some stumblings that we had along the way. So Rob was officer on one of the trucks. There was a malfunction with one of the SCBAs. So he ended up doffing his pack and giving it to one of the firefighters so they could continue along with the scenario. So then that kind of made Rob be exterior only. Yeah. So that kind of got Rob not out of the fight, but he wasn't. But we, as officers, like if we have an attack team going in, we're going to go in with them. We're not going to be hands on the hose line and like right on the nozzle. We're not going to be hands on the tools and dedicated to running a tool. But we can. We can pitch in and help out. But then we can also bump back outside, give a better update, and then go back in with our team. Couple the stumbling points that happened there. They called for a vent team to happen. The vent team was in place. The fan was out. The fan was running. The interior attack team made entry before the fan was put in place, like before it was turned in place. It was there. It was ready to rock, but they entered before the fan was in place. And like the downfall of that, I believe if there was the officer attached or if they were just a bit more seasoned firefighters, the smoke level that night was crazy low. Like I would say maybe 3 feet off the floor was like your visibility level. We had some pretty good hay going, and we had a secondary hay bale in a burn barrel upstairs just to simulate like it wasn't on fire. It was just that like smolder, right?
It's for that smoke.
Just for the smoke, right? And then our burn room at the back, right? So they made it in, and they immediately encountered another door. And like even with those doors mostly closed, the visibility was like zero, right? So these guys got in. Grant was on the inside with them. No, lies. Mike was on the inside with them, and was like kind of that angel on the shoulder. So that's kind of what we were doing. Like, I was outside for the IC as that angel. Like, we wanted to see success, right?
Yeah.
But, like, we're also not going to spell it out every step of the way. Like, we want them to work through problems that are coming up. And then when we see, you know, hey, we're kind of getting snagged here, we'll lean in and say, hey, like, have you thought about this, right? So with Mike on the inside, they got to the first door, and they're like, oh, shoot, like, should we go left? Should we go right? Like, what's our deal here? And he's like, man, like, have you, like, maybe you should try this. And they're like, oh, okay. So they take the left side door, because the one door was a little bit obstructed by plan. So they push to the left, push themselves in. It was doing a search towards the fire, which is great. Like, you always want to search fire room back. But they missed a patient or two that were right there. Mm-hmm. But again, visibility was super, super low, and not activating that fan really knocked this back, right? So they went in and pushed, and they got to the seat of the fire. They did hydraulically vent and, like, made a bit of a difference, which is good. Action the fire, blah, blah, blah. At this time, a RIT team was assembled, which is great. So the next two engines showed up, and we had a RIT team assemble, and we had a safety officer assemble. So, like, he got those pieces of the puzzle in play, which is good. The RIT team did an all-star job. Like, I gave them the gold star of the night. They had their tarp down. They had their dedicated hose line. They had all of their tools. They walked around, did their own 360, gave a report, softened every door that was nice. In play. And through a ladder right away. So hitting all of the key points, and was ready to fight at any point in time. And they weren't just stagnant, like they were continuously moving and working. So the RIT team was ready to rock right away. So big gold star to those guys.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Actually, one of our new officers, Adam, was in charge of that. So hats off to Adam and his team. Those guys did a really awesome job. Secondary search team pushes in, and now they're doing their primary search. They found the patient pretty quickly, got the patient out. We at that point said, yes, you have EHS on scene, so they just had to get the patient away out of the hot zone, out of the warm zone, over to EHS. So did a quick patient handoff, and they're back to the fight. I believe at that point, I think Mike dropped the firefighter. And the firefighter was, yeah, like, just sucker punch from behind. He's down and out. So the firefighter drops halfway to our second story. So they had to come out the top. So they made the right choice. They came out the top rather than coming all the way back down through the building. Came out the top, did a quick package, and got him right down to the bottom. And it's crazy watching the 2 weeks, the difference of how everybody, you know, reacted to each scenario. The search team on the inside.
When you say brought him back out, did it bring down a ladder through a window or a door?
No, so in our burn building, we've got, like, a deck up on the top.
Yeah.
So they got him out to the top. Like, they got him out the top door onto the deck. Did a quick and dirty package. I believe there was a spine board that came out as well. And they were doing the package, getting him onto the stairs. And just because he's still in, like, our good G1 SCBA, I did a full stop there and said, okay, stop there, guys. Like, you're doing everything right, but let's not damage gear here. Let's bring.
May have damaged gear before.
Yeah, because this may have happened. So I just did, okay, like, you've done all the right steps. Hey, patient, just walk on down here. Back down, and then we stopped them a little bit away from the building, and that's where they started to do the full firefighter down pack or shucking of the oyster, right. Whatever, right?
Yeah.
So they went through all of that, did a really awesome job. They had him out of his gear quickly. They were asking, like, because he's obviously alive, they're like, hey, what do we see? And I'm like, you've got a pulse, there's some shallow breathing. We don't know why he collapsed, but he is down, right? So it's funny. So the group that was there right away heard that. They knew that. Somebody comes in. They're like, hey, there's no one on his chest. And, like, they go right to the chest. And like, I was about to jump in and be like, hey. And then someone's there like, no. You know, we have there's a pulse or whatever, right? At least somebody spoke up immediately. But again, like, guys know how we train, and we generally throw the worst at them.
Yeah, usually doing the 500 ounce CPR
stuff. Exactly, right? So, that's what we were training the past couple weeks, yeah. So that's in their mind. So that person's like, oh no, we're shitting the bed, let's get on that chest immediately. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the case for that scenario, which is great that somebody in the team spoke up. So once that happened, obviously anytime that there's a Mayday call and there is a firefighter down, all non-essential fire ground work stops, right? So once that firefighter was out, I mean, there's still, the fire wasn't completely out, and now is the secondary search, and there's still a missing patient. Because at that point, the father who is in the ambulance has now come to quote and said, holy shit, hey, like, I was in there, where's my kid? Mm-hmm. So we relay that info back to the IC that, hey, there's still a missing child. So a secondary search happens, and they ended up getting the child out as well. And we hid the child because it's either, you generally find somebody really close to the fire in a bad way, really close to a door trying to get their own egress, or hiding. Right. Mm-hmm. So we had the person that was close to a door in the room where the child was, so made it as far as that, and then collapsed, where the child was hiding kind of behind the bed, easily found once looking, but you probably would miss that on a primary, mm-hmm. when it's dirty smoke, right? So that all went well. There was some major stumbling blocks, but that's to be expected with, and I say this with respect, with the people that were in play. Missing a few key seasoned firefighters to go along with these people, everybody worked their asses off. And like, I couldn't state that enough, that people worked hard and they got the job done. But there was a huge room for improvement from week one to week two. And on week two, so we did the exact same thing. We looked around the room prior and we saw we had a ton more seasoned firefighters here. So we're like, you know what? Like, Grant and Mike were like, hey, we should like throw in a secondary call and blah blah blah. Like, no, let's dial it back, let's do the exact same thing. Yes, okay, hey, like, there's more guys here, so let's throw in a third patient, but make it the exact same call, and we'll just move around patient location. I'm like, I want these guys to have a win. Like, we were in years past, we've been really good, and by good I mean bad, at like doing the old attaboys. Like, it doesn't matter good or bad, like, everybody worked hard, so it was always an attaboy, where like, what we're really trying to do is, you know, focus on, hey, like, we had a lot of winnable moments here and you, mm-hmm. guys did great, however, like, let's outline some of these spots where we have room for improvement and then improve. Like, that gives us on the training side a direction of things that we need to focus on, right? So like, we didn't take scenario week number one as we have to focus on a ton of stuff. You know, we just have to focus on, hey, like, so firefighter A, maybe they shouldn't be teamed up with firefighter B because they're both still not rookies anymore, but they got some time to put in still, right? So, you know, like, for us in command, that's good for us to see. Hey, like, this person is going to work their ass off. They've got all of the fundamental skills dialed, but some of the decision making that you get from hands-on, like, real life experience, they haven't had that yet. So when something goes quote wrong, mm-hmm. or it's not like textbook, there's like not a lot of like thinking on the fly. I think that was kind of like our biggest takeaway from scenario week number one. Just having that mindset to like think on the fly. Yeah. I think, right? So yeah, that was kind of week number one. And then week number two was the exact same thing, just with a different crew.
Nice. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, again, that training is so valuable, right? Like you said, like, just switching it up, getting the guys to think on the fly, and, you know, not always train the same way. Mm-hmm. This is how we're always going in. Like, you had the fan set up, but they chose just to do door control and move in and then hydraulic vent. Whereas, yes, that's a great option for a lot of fires, but this other one could have been
being able better. To read that smoke.
Yeah.
Right. And with IC being detached enough away from like the entrance to the building, not having eyes on that smoke, mm-hmm. just, you know, the way the apparatus was set up and everything, Like, he was kind of positioned more towards the Alpha side, and we were getting entrance off the Bravo. So, like, IC could see the guys setting up, but, like, he's not seeing what that smoke layer looks like once that door opens. It's, mm-hmm. it's not up to him. Right. It's up to the interior attack team. Like, it's their call to say, hey, this is too shitty. I need more than just us to push in and hydraulically vent. And then again, like, just because of the way things happened, then Rob likely would have been attached to that team, but we had to shift on the fly. And, you know, in hindsight, even Rob says, I likely shouldn't have given my pack up. I, you know, there's other ways that we could have worked around that. What's more valuable, experience and leadership, or, you know, a lesser seasoned firefighter with a full SCBA? Like, that guy could have been put on something else outside and been more valuable than what we put into play with making that choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, dropping the officer sometimes, like, we do see what happens. Mm-hmm. Let's see what this decentralized command set kicks in.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it happened with some not seasoned guys, so
yeah,
they couldn't shift as easily. Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, then we were talking to the guys about this after the second night. Mm-hmm. A couple of the guys, you know, even they were kind of still beating themselves up over it. And I said, listen, I said, the two nights you just had are like, that's like a year-end scenario for a lot of departments. Mm. And we just did two back-to-back. Just because a lot of departments don't have a burn center building, a burn building, that we can do these massive scenarios in. And we're running them every month, like these big scenarios where it's like, people don't get that opportunity.
I said, yeah, so, usually you train up to it, and then you go off to live fire and do it.
Yeah, so I'm like, we're literally...
Maybe once a year.
Yeah, we're literally back-to-back. We're dropping these massive scenarios on you. And there's kind of two ways to think of whether they should get better, which they all do. But also, like, now we're, like, throwing, like, RIP and Maydays and firefighter down CPR and multiple patients. Whereas I think most departments would be like, oh, they'd be happy, like, oh, there's one patient inside. Go get him. Whereas now we're actually trying to hammer the guys even more. It's like, okay, let's get the smoke down to like a foot off the ground. Let's get, or 3 feet, whatever we had it at. Mm. I think it was lower than 3 feet from higher.
I think it might. Yeah.
So, you know, get the smoke crazy, add three patients, have multiple fire starts, have this, and, you know, tenders are running, and then you get the firefighter down CPR. So, yeah, it's going to draw those guys. It's going to kind of throw some wrenches and things, right? It's going to get them thinking. And ultimately, when we go to a real fire, it's going to be super easy.
Sure.
Because that fire, like, that's like a once in a lifetime. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
three patients and, or two to three patients, heavily involved, and people are, you know, RIT and CPR. One thing that was interesting on the second one that I heard happened, again, the CPR happened and the guys pulled the officer, I think it was the officer down.
This time. Yeah.
So they pulled the officer out onto the deck, and what had happened was they pulled him onto the deck, and whether it was like because it's training or because people aren't associating that deck is now on top of a burning structure, they had actually stopped there. And from my understanding, like, the group kind of got bogged down and they started doing the CPR and the shucking of the orchards while they're still on top of the kind of the burning structure. And what happened was the detachment kicked in. Because, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the firefighter running the at the hydrant, which is probably, 200 feet away?
That's right.
He's so far detached that he looked over and he's like, what are those guys doing up there? He goes, that doesn't look right. But because he's so detached, he actually, you know, kind of beetled over to you.
Yeah.
As a safety guy, and he says, is that right? And you're like, nope. He's like, someone should tell somebody. Yep. So he went over and told the IC, who was kind of, you know, he's trying to run his command, and he said, hey, that's not right. He said, oh, it isn't right. So then everything progressed, and they pulled the guy off the roof and stuff. So just having that ability, like, we teach all our guys, like, if you see something going wrong, don't expect the officer to fix it right away. You go tell somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, don't be like, oh, they probably know what they're doing. Like, no. Like, because sometimes we get sucked in the scene. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a right to be like, hey, that's not right. Some people think that's not the way to run a fire department because they're like, well, then they'll just tell you what to do whenever they want. I'm like, yeah, they should. Yeah. Like, as long as if it's for safety. Mm-hmm. Like, but there should be a little bit of a discussion. Right?
Yeah, like us as, you know, command. You know, we are open to that, though. Like we're very, very receptive. I think if you're not receptive, you're doing a pretty shitty job as command staff. But yeah, definitely empower your members to, you know, have open eyes and open mind to you know, be able to speak if they see something. Like, you know, Mike was way off. He was driving one of our tenders. He was way off at the hydrant doing hydrant ops. And like, he was, like Scott says, so far out of the scenario that he's like, well, that looks shitty. You know, at no point should somebody who sees that not speak up and say it. Mm-hmm. So big props to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what a lot of people forget about too, like, these fire practices, like, you guys are 7:30 start, mm-hmm. right? So end of a long work day, end of a long, yep. midweek through, right? Like, we're doing a lot. We've got a lot of stuff going on, yep. you know, and then we're still volunteer, panel call, whatever you want to call us, you know, and, you know, it's hard to stay focused, and it's a lot of work. Yes. So, you know, like, one thing we talked about before is we've been trying Magic Mind.
Yep. Yeah, we have.
And Magic Mind, you know, like, it's, well, what was it, a couple weeks ago? Mm-hmm. We did, and then we got a second batch. So I started drinking my second batch of Magic Mind this week. And, you know, it's loaded with nootropics and adaptogens and stuff like lion's mane and cordyceps, you know, all the stuff that helps you reduce stress and anxiety, fatigue, improves your physical, mental well-being and your endurance. You know, and for anybody in the emergency services like us, you know, to help stay focused, it's really been working well. I know we've been on it for a little while, and I'd really encourage anybody to help if they want to try something like that. You know, if other energy drinks aren't working, mm-hmm. try Magic Mind. You know, it works really well. So if you're interested in that, you can check out www.magicmind.co/DTFF. That'll give you 56% off.
56%?
56% off your subscription for the next 10 days if you use our code DTFF. But it'll also be valid forever for 20% off.
It's using percentage. Our
code. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, again, Magic Mind.
Heck of a deal.
www.magicmind.co/DTFF. Mm-hmm. So go online, check it out. We really enjoy trying it out and using it, and let us know how you like it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why don't we talk about your second scenario, your second group?
I guess, well, I think we kind of started on it.
Yeah, we kind of like went back and forth there. So second group scenario there was the one with the second firefighter down, where our tender driver noticed the group was up on the roof there still. But kind of start to finish there, exact same thing. It was the alarm as they're responding, because there was actually a pretty good handful of people that were here that night that weren't here before. So like we nailed it exactly the same. And
different command though.
But different command level as
and,
well.
And different people on different points.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, realistically, a lot of the same players were there, but they were doing a different role, and they had the support of some people that weren't there prior. So as command, we had Adam, our newest officer, was going to be command. Bob showed up early, and he was going to be like the direct angel on the shoulder for Adam. Adam did a phenomenal job for his first like big scenario, and again, like Scott said, like, this is the Armageddon-style scenario with so many moving factors as opposed to, like, just that, you know, single room and contents fire with maybe one patient. Like, that's what most places are going to train. So he got everything, which is great. I think he excelled. He did really, really well. Had a couple points where, you know, he's like, hey, like, I could probably do something different here. I gave him a couple of pointers throughout the night. He was very, very receptive of it. So he got on scene, did a quick 360, came up with a plan. Once he was on scene, we said the next apparatus can leave. So once he got there, our engine left the hall here, responded down to the training grounds. And he immediately put out, hey, I want a line over here to the backside. I want a line to the Bravo. Let's get a team ready to go in. So he got that plan rolling. Once they were on scene, our rescue truck rolled next, with which was going to simulate our next engine, because Scott had the other one for the rookies. Mm-hmm. And I mean, any single structure or any single family structure, you can run off of one engine.
Yeah.
There's been talk about, do we want to, you know, commit our second due for RIT, and like that's going to run a designated RIT line. So if everything fails, our RIT line's still good, and I'm not against that. I think that's great. However, our one apparatus can run any, like, yeah, most any single family resident structure fire.
And the rescue truck's got BA on it. And, yep, and it actually has a pump on it with, what, mm-hmm, how many gallons of water is that again? 250 gallons? More? Less?
More. 500?
So, I mean, mm-hmm, you could use it in a pinch if your pump went
down. I mean, most city trucks have, like, that's what
We're running a rescue truck. That's what city trucks have in their, mm-hmm, tank.
So that's what we have on deck, and it's, I mean, we're not going to, but it would absolutely, in a pinch, you could do some pretty good ops with it. So anyway, no, basically the exact same thing. Got a RIT team assembled immediately. RIT team went around and they did their 360, came up with a plan. They were throwing ladders. I don't know if they got up to the second floor. They didn't get up to the second floor and soften the door in time for the firefighter down. So they were actually on their way up there to soften it as the interior team booted the door open. It was pretty funny to watch. Like, they were getting their tools out, getting ready to start to force the door. So on our burn building, if you, like, slam the upper door, it'll, like, wedge itself in.
It's warped over time.
And you can't open it.
It's perfect.
You can't open it by...
We made it. Yeah.
So you can't do it by hand from the outside. And even from the inside, like, you would have to, like, physically boot the door. So they were just getting set, and then the door comes open at them, which is, I mean, it's fine. So they were actually right at the door. The downfall, and we remind everybody, if you're going inside, have a radio. Don't have it wide, like, don't have it cranked. Mm-hmm. So, like, as your officer or your team leader, whoever it is doing comms to the outside, so you're not squawking over the team that's behind you.
Yes.
However, when the officer dropped, there was no mayday. So we had no idea there was a firefighter down until they were out already doing the work. And the RIT team happened to just be there. Like, it was super happenstance that, like, all of that happened. So that kind of aided to that clusterfuck of everybody right on top of the building,
mm-hmm,
because they were going up there to do a job, and then they had a patient came out the door directly in front of them.
Yeah,
so there was a patient upstairs and the firefighter down. So one guy got the patient out of the way because they were, like, physically in the way of the door. So a patient comes out, firefighter down comes out. So the interior team's there, the RIT team's there, and everything's happening quickly.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of stood back, and I'm watching and I'm listening, and I'm like, I don't hear anything yet. So still, nobody on the fire ground knows that this is a firefighter down.
Right.
Right? So I go up to the IC. I'm like, hey, man. He's like, what's up? I'm like, I think that's your officer. He's like, doing what? I'm like, nothing. He's like, what do you mean? Yeah, I think he's dead. He's like, oh, shit.
I'm
like,
dead.
Yeah, I'm not dead. Like, quote, right? I think he's dropped, right? And he's like, oh, they didn't call it, did they? I'm like, nope. Probably didn't have a radio on him. He's like, okay, shoot. So he actions the mayday, so everybody knows. And then as he hears that, actually, the guy on the pump deck does a three horn blast, right?
Nice.
And there was some chat about that afterwards. He says, because there's a mayday, everybody out of the building, now that they're already out of the building. I'm like, well, they're not out of the building because they're actually still up on the roof, right? So we say, again, not all non-important firefighting stops, and you come out. And on our debrief, when they were inside, they made the choice not to extinguish the fire. So they left a little bit of the fire going, because they were more worried about the patient. So they actioned the fire. They did the reset. There was somebody on the outside that was doing some penciling, so they were keeping it at bay. So I don't mind any of that. However, when they went upstairs on the deck, even the guy that was penciling got pulled away. And it was during, I understand why the safety guy did this because he's like, hey, like, you're new. I want you to have a look at this. So, like, he wanted him to be involved. However, while they were working on Warren, who was down, like, our fire actually got rocking pretty heavy again. And, like I said, I'm like, we should never pull that guy off the fire, you know, rookie or not, because that, like, if this was a real structure, that was going to be a problem. So, like, let's not get complacent that this is burn buildings and it's made out of metal. Let's make sure that we leave somebody on that hose line. There's many other people that were on the fire ground. Tag them out. Like, hey, you know, like, this isn't normal, but I want this you know, newer firefighter to see it. Let's get somebody else over there so we can fold him in. But for realism, let's make sure somebody stays on that, because, yeah, that fire was a pretty full rock again by the time they got him off of the deck. So that was kind of, like, one of the, you know, bigger takeaways was...
I mean, the good thing, like, in a real fire, I'm hoping someone would notice the smoke level and the heat level. Because in the burn building, obviously, the hotter it burns, the cleaner it burns. So you might not even notice the fire is still rocking down there, because where they were, like, imagine where they were versus where the fire is. It's like, they might not even notice the fire is rocking.
No.
I think in a real structure, you would be able to be like, oh, what the hell's going on over there with this all the smoke?
In a real structure fire, it doesn't matter if you're a rookie. Like, that's not a time
you'd be come on, we'll investigate and check what's going on over here.
Like, it's a real fire. We would never do that. And we had a pretty good chat about that afterwards as well. But
Back to the fact that some of the guys didn't bring a radio with them, which, you know, that's not good. I mean, they should be having a radio on.
Big learning point, yeah.
But what's the first thing that goes? Radio. Every time. Like, everybody's radio always craps out. Whether you have one or not, it's always like something that goes wrong with it. Or
it was good to hear that the air horn blast.
It's nice that they shifted gears and weren't like, hey, you didn't get radioed in. Like, just right away, I see what's going on, radio maybe. And to not even have to tell the guy on the pump deck that he just went right over and started blasting. It's perfect.
So that was a seasoned guy again, knowing what to do.
Yeah, that's good.
So that was great.
Because sometimes people need to be reminded, blast that thing. Because, I think some people think that the three blasts only happens when the building's like imminent collapse and they want everybody out. It's not just, you know, any mayday. Because we've had a real mayday when that one of our guys fell through the deck that one time.
That's you called it.
And that guy was at exterior deck. So he wasn't inside, and he was like fairly, by that time, the fire was like almost knocked down.
Exterior deck leading into the
door. But, you know, you still called the mayday. I think at the time we weren't training to blast the air on. That was back in the old days.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, so it was like the mayday got called. I think even calling mayday was like, who's calling mayday? What's going on? No one knew what to do. It's like, oh, Jesus. So, I mean, that was, probably 10 or 12 years ago by now.
Oh, more than that.
Longer than that. Yeah, longer?
Yeah.
Man, why are we so old?
Yeah. Way longer than that, yeah.
Yeah, so... it was so it's good to hear that training is carry on.
Absolutely.
So to sort of wrap all that up, when we plan these events in our mind, we also try to plan like length of call, right? Like, let's do a realistic look of how long these things should actively take. And then you build in a couple little hiccup moments or whatever, right? So when we like built the plan in our head, we're like, if like the most dialed firefighters show up, it should take anywhere from 30 to 35 minutes. Okay, so now let's build in a couple of hiccups. Okay, so let's say 40 minutes. Okay, sure. The first week was an hour and 20 minutes, so there was many hiccups that came. And again, they got the job done. So it was a win at the end of the night. So like, I don't count that as something bad. I don't say it's a negative, but there was room for improvement. From first arriving unit, which was the duty officer on scene, to the last patient coming out on the second scenario was just over 45 minutes. So it was kind of right on time. And they had moments that they could have been faster. But again, it was a massive win. I think things went way, way better. And I think the main testament there is like the coupled IC, like Bob with Adam, I think worked out really, really well. And the fact that we had a couple extra season, you know, firefighters, and then one extra officer there.
Right.
So, yeah.
Nice. Well done. Yeah, it's always good to have some good takeaway learning.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Because, you know, that's not going to happen again. Hopefully.
Not yeah. Again. Or, I mean, it might, yeah. whatever. Mm-hmm. But as long as people shift gears from it.
Yep. Yeah.
Even if they don't necessarily, if they do it again, whatever. But if they shift gears and they're able to be like, okay, that just happened. Mm-hmm. Let's not go like, oh, God, it happened. Everybody stop. Actual stop. Yeah. We're stopping the scenario. No, let's keep going. Yeah. Yeah. Unless something obviously
gets working, right.
But like, mm-hmm. keep pushing forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think like it's a lot different, these scenarios, than just doing training. Because training, you always win. Like, and when you did drills, you're like always winning.
mm-hmm.
Because there's really no. Like, there's no other way to do it. Like, you have mm-hmm. like, when you're drilling, you're winning. And so these, you might not always win. But in the end, I think we always make them, allow them to win at least a small part of the fight.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
whether it's not a perfect win, but it's still
yeah.
still going to be a win in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're learning from them.
That's sure.
That's yeah.
the point.
Yeah. yeah, there was a couple guys that were taking it pretty hard, which is good. You know, we always say, like, if people brush off when they stumble, I don't know how much they're actually going to retain that then, right? Mm-hmm. But when you can see that they're, like, physically, emotionally, like, invested into wanting to win, and they're invested into their training, when they, like, come back to the hall and they unpack all of, like, what just happened, and, like, what I don't want to see is guys get so far down on themselves that they actually, like, go backwards.
No.
But I do like to see, like, if I do shitty, if I know that I did something wrong, like, I am my worst critic.
Yeah.
I will like, break down the call, break down the scenario, and try to figure out how I can do better. I'll talk to my team that's around me. I'll talk to firefighters. I'll talk to, you know, anybody, and just be like, hey, like, what do you think we could have done better? How could I have done better? What can we learn from this, right? So we had a few of the guys that were, like, kind of bumming on themselves after the first scenario. And we sat around and had a pretty good chat with them and, you know, saying, like, hey, like where do you think that you, you know, stumbled? You know, one of them was like, I should have had a radio. I should have had better comms. Like, I never should have done this or that, right? We're like, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Like, in all of those aspects, you really should have done something different. But you're recognizing that.
Yeah.
And you're recognizing that in a training environment where, like we knew, like, we had your safety in mind because we had techs on the inside. We had one that was on the outside in full SCBA that could have jumped in at any point in time. Plus our scenario safety officer, plus our scenario IC, and every other firefighter that was there. Like we make these things, like, they're not immediately winnable, but it's a very winnable task. But, like, it's a safe environment, right? Like, something's got to go super, super sideways for it to, like, not be safe, but you can fail, like, pretty heavily along the way before mm-hmm. we do something, right? So being able to come back and do that debrief as a group, I think, goes a long way, and it makes them a better firefighter as well. And on the second scenario, this one firefighter, he was way, way better. He mm-hmm. actually came up and asked me, he's like, hey, how do you think I did? I'm like, I don't know, I didn't notice you. And he's like, oh, I'm like, that's good. So, like, when I'm sitting back as the guy running the scenario, like, I'm not looking for each individual firefighter. I'm big, big picture looking at everything. And if I don't notice you, you might not be the all-star, and that's okay, but you're doing your job.
Yeah.
So, and then he's like, oh, okay, sweet. Like, so if either do something so well that you get noticed, and that's great, because, like, if you're doing something awesome, that's great. But
ideally, just be the gray
man. If nothing else, do like Scott says and be that gray man and just show up, do your job well, don't be noticed, and make sure everybody goes home safe. So, yeah, that's good.
Absolutely. And that's why it's important to have these operational debriefs. If it's a training or a post-incident mm-hmm. analysis, right? Like, that's exactly the reason why we do it. So we can grow from it and learn from it. So,
mm-hmm.
no, it sounded like really good couple scenarios. It's good.
Yeah, it's fun.
Very engaging.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any more to add before we move on? All right. Well, let's get into some shout-outs here. Modus, Ash.
Yeah, Modus. Obviously, Snyder Tool claim to fame. Scott was just saying how helpful it is with our newer recruits. They got some firsthand hands-on training with it. Yeah, we're using them often. You know, like, we don't get all these, you know, massive structure fires like we did last year.
Yeah.
We've had a few now. But when you're out there in training, you're out there on calls. It just makes your your life a lot easier.
Especially with the 2.5.
Especially with the 2.5.
I kind of joke with him. I say, if I see you with one of these on an 1.5, I'm going to laugh at you.
Yeah, right? Like, that's not really the spot. I mean, it is if you're, you know, smaller stature or whatever.
Or if you're sitting there for a long time or, yeah. But I was just kind of being dick. I guess I was being a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I always laugh at these guys that are on the internet. They're like, why don't you just use your hands? Like, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, like, why do we have fire trucks and not... like horse-drawn carriages and buckets, right? Like, things evolve, and, like, there's tools that make our lives easier in every aspect. So this is something, especially when you start moving, you know, bigger water.
I don't like change, but I also don't like it the way it is.
Yeah, yeah, classic, what, right?
Starting a vault?
So, yeah, we've brought it right into our rookie training now. So Snagger Tools for hose handling. They've got their force entry kits. They've got their mass bags. Just a ton of soft entry kits,
which you're like quite adept at now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Soft entry anything.
I can soft entry the shit out of anything. That's great. So, yeah, check them out online. If you like what you see there, discount code DTFF5. Also, check out all of their Fire Life videos. We happen to be one of the all-stars there. So, would appreciate a quick view and a share. And watch for them and all of their content at our spring seminar, which we'll talk about more a little later.
Mm-hmm.
Modus.
Modus. Scott, stop the bleed.
Stop the bleed. Three methods of bleeding control are... direct pressure, you guys do. Direct pressure, wound packing, or tourniquet application. If you're gonna get a tourniquet, get a good one.
Wow.
Yeah. So make sure it's a good tourniquet. Don't buy one off Wish. Because what you say, you wish you had a better
one. You wish you had a better one.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, that's it for Stop the Bleed. I think it's Stop the Bleed month coming up again in May. May 25th. Yeah. They have a new website they just dropped. I see they have a podcast now. They have a scholarship.
Yeah, they got the scholarship out.
Yeah, they have their own podcast. They have a scholarship. They have ambassadors, which I guess we are impromptu ambassadors, but maybe they don't know about us yet.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, stopthebleed.org.com. Stopthebleed, everything. check them out to learn how to be an instructor or take a course.
Awesome. Manscaped.
Yeah, Manscaped. We've been using their products now for a while. Pretty big fan. It's funny, I actually came home the other day, I forgot to put mine back on the charger, and the missus is like, hey, you tidy up the boys? And I'm like, I did, why? She's like, I just saw you and put it back on the charger. I'm like, copy. So we've been running their Lawnmower 4.0. Basically, what we're running is their body and balls grooming kit is kind of what we've all been running. So it's got the lawnmower, it's got the weed whacker. They've just come out now with the weed whacker 2.0, which we've been trying out. They've got a ton of stuff for just basically men's body health. Check them out online. Use discount code DTFF20. It's going to get you 20% off your purchase. It comes along with free shipping as well. And kind of the big tie-in with the Manscaped brand to us is just the cancer awareness and like cancer fighting.
That's right.
All of the, or not all of them, but one of the main absorption points is going to be through that groin area. And the best way to, combat that is to keep that area clean. Obviously, having a nicely groomed region aids in cleaning. And
clean yourself, you dirty bastards.
Yeah, I mean, just be clean. Yeah. But that's great.
Awesome. All right, Scott, Tanner Olson.
Yeah, Tanner Olson's gonna be playing at our spring seminar this year. Just dropped a new song, and again, I can't remember what it's called.
Blow?
Yeah, Blow. No, Blow. There's another new song.
Oh, is it?
Just dropped the other day. It's actually it's a little different than Blow. It's more like kind of I don't know. I'd call it classically country.
Oh yeah. Blow's kind of. Well, he's got the guest. Yeah, so it's
a
little bit more pop country.
Yeah. So. Now I gotta figure out what it is. actually, as you guys talk, I'll. But anyways, he's gonna be playing. He's from the West Coast of Canada. He's gonna be playing at the seminar, doing some other tour dates. Check him out on Spotify. And
Better at Being Me.
Better at Being Me. That's what it is.
Yep. Hey.
There it is. I'm gonna add that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it got added to some other playlists and radio stations and stuff. So
sweet.
It's pretty good. So yeah, if you want to hear him, come to our spring seminar, check it out, and check him out on Spotify.
Awesome. Ash, Wolf Tree Coffee.
Yeah, Wolf Tree Coffee. Coffee out of Oliver, BC. They've been wicked enough to come on and support the podcast. We're going to be supporting them at our spring seminar. So all coffee poured at the spring seminar is going to be a Wolf Tree blend. And when I call it a blend, it's going to be a blend that we are sampling and coming up with them. So watch for that to drop. We're going to be super stoked to help launch that. Some sort of firefighter oriented. I'm sure it's going to be strong and dark and whatever else. And
awesomeness.
And super duper awesome. So check them out on their social medias. It's Wolf Tree Coffee. Yeah, they are shipping and dropping off anywhere in the South Okanagan right now, but they will ship anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Awesome.
Keeping us fueled.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of their little claim there, and I would say it definitely works for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that note, seminar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seminar, May 5th, 6th, and 7th. Really, May 6th and 7th. 5th is the kind of the registration night.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is also like a little mini party.
Yeah, mini party, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not, no big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a little bit of live music that night, too. So, yes, I guess in itself, that's kind of a... That'd be like a night of party all by itself.
Yeah.
But the next 2 days are really the seminar days. I think we're at 23 or 24 sessions right now.
Yeah.
Lots of craziness. 5 or 6 live fire sessions. Todd and I are teaching 2 different styles of kind of that bleeding control, active shooter. Mm-hmm. We're going to have you're going to have lots of blood. I'm going to have lots of screaming. Yep. And smoke and sirens going off. It's gonna be awesome.
It's gonna be awesome.
Mm-hmm. And that's just 2 sessions.
Yeah,
it reminds me of The Simpsons when Mark Bart puts in the Milhouse puts in the you don't know what I'm talking about.
No.
No,
they get a new video game. This is like years ago. He gets a new video game. He puts in half the thing in it. It was like, this is just me entering my name. His hair's all blown back.
Okay, so I have no idea.
Anyways, I just described 2 sessions. It's awesome.
It's like nice.
36 seasons of The Simpsons or 38 seasons.
Someone along I'm talking about. So anyways, 22 other sessions that are awesome. Along with Todd and I.
Yeah.
So check us out on the Spring Seminar, all of our Spring Seminar Facebook page. If you're able to come, come. If not... We're going to have lots of pictures and posts, and Modus is going to be there filming. Yep. And
mm-hmm.
And lots of cool stuff.
Yeah, I think we're currently sitting, we're over 300 registered now. Mm-hmm. We still have a little bit of time left for registration. We'll definitely cap out at like 500 that night.
Not 500 participants.
Not 500 firefighters, but yeah, everybody.
We don't have that many sessions.
No. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of people milling about that weekend, so yep. there is still some space left for firefighters. We are kind of getting to the cap. Like, I think 350 would kind of be the max that we want to see.
Yeah, the problem is if like people are like, oh, we should get more. No, if you get more, you need more sessions, because otherwise the groups mm-hmm. just get too big. So
yeah,
Between that 320 ish, that's almost a perfect number.
Yeah,
that's,
it's a really nice number to keep the sessions or the. The group size is down, so you really get the most out of the hands-on. Because,
yeah.
We do not do classroom. There's zero lectures. We have...
Even the lectures are not lectures.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
Like, we had people that wanted to do lectures, and they're like, but what if you didn't do that? Like, I hear what you're saying. I like what you're saying. But can you do hands-on and do this instead? And they're like, oh, that's way cooler.
Yeah. Well, for example, we have the Fortis electrical guys, and they could easily just put a PowerPoint up and talk about electrical, but they're gonna we're putting a telephone pole in the ground, mm-hmm. having a car into the telephone pole, wires down. It's just like a giant live PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. It's a giant live model of what they're gonna do.
Yeah,
Fortis has been absolutely awesome with us. They've donations, they've given us lots of swag to put in. They're bringing a massive LNG truck down to run mm-hmm. Run some live fire there.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool of them. So what Fortis is our local, I guess not even local, like local by BC.
Gas and BC Alberta, even.
Yeah, Bass. Gas and electrical.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're great.
Yeah, so big props to Fortis. We've had a few of their members on the podcast a couple years ago now.
Yeah.
Actually, kind of right after our last seminar.
Yes.
So it's been probably 4 years ago now. Have we been doing this for that long?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
That's crazy.
I think we had them on just before.
Oh,
we,
just before.
We thought, and then
right. The COVID so they were going to be kind of the ramp up to seminar. Yeah. So, yeah, it sounds like, yeah, it would have been 2 or 3 years ago now. Yeah. But they have been amazing partners with us. Anything that we ask for, they give us more. So, yeah, big, big props to Fortis. You can't really shout out Fortis because if you need gas or power to your home, that's where you're getting it. But, I mean, big, big props to these guys for getting on board, seeing the value of our training, because it's just giving back to the majority of these people are going to take that training back to, their home departments or whatever, where Fortis is obviously supplying them service. So
I mentioned how good they mean, and somebody kind of facetiously, kind of jokingly said, "Well, they got, of course they can do that. They got lots of money." Mm-hmm. I said, "Yeah, they could. They can do that because they have lots of money. They don't have to do that.
That's right.
But they don't have to help us as much as they are. Mm-hmm. So they are helping us a lot. So,
hugely.
Yeah,
they could literally be like, no, like yeah, we'll give you a guy or whatever. But no, they are helping us a lot with this."
Yeah, like not throwing out the dollars and cents of it, because that's not up to us to say.
No.
However, but just the costs to bring this big LNG tank down, like they kind of threw out a value of like what it costs to like get a truck driver to like mob this thing from where it stays at the JI for the most part, and then come to Oliver, set up here, and then all of their instructors to come. Like, it's crazy amounts of money that these guys do.
And they could literally just have done a PowerPoint.
Yeah, and they could have just done a PowerPoint. So they are all in. They see the value. I am super thrilled to be working with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seminar. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, lastly, you have us. So Facebook, we are currently doing some rebranding. Mm-hmm. So our current Facebook is still, the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast -DTFF, Down to Fight Fire. However, we are moving away from that to just Down to DTFF, just Down to Fight Fire.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still in the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast.
Yes, exactly.
But it's now on a different website.
Right? Yeah, Facebook. Yeah, but we're trying to bring everybody over from that Facebook site to our new one, to Down to Fight Fire. So if you can, please check that out and switch on over. We'll do our best to kind of keep up with comments and stuff on that
on
one
both,
as well.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, we will be phasing out the other one.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we are on the Twitter, TikTok, and Instagrams.
Yeah.
And the YouTube as well. So please, our YouTube one is still the same. I think our YouTube is
still... Yeah, everything else is the same.
Yeah, YouTube is still the normal.
Yeah.
And so, I think our website, we'll have a website soon, which will have a shop on it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll have some shirts for sale, including our new moose shirt.
Yeah, got a new design.
Moose merch.
Yeah, we're going to have some moose merch.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, stay tuned for that stuff.
Yeah.
But thanks everybody for following and staying supporters. And stay tuned. We're going to have some more stuff coming out.
Yeah.
I guess that is everything. Mm-hmm. Ash, any more?
No, thanks a lot.
Scott.
Nope, have a good night.
Thanks for listening, everybody. As always, stay safe, stay DTFF.